So what mechanisms are available? So there's several emerging new tools and mechanisms, some of them legislative, some of them business-related, which are related and associated with this idea of natural capital. I'll just go through a few of these very quickly. There's state-led natural capital valuations. That's integration of the true value of the environment into national accounts, which the UN are very much working on at international level. And the World Bank have an initiative called Wealth Accounting and Valuation of Ecosystem Services, the WAVES initiative. Some countries are looking at radical subsidy reform. We know that $500 billion goes to oil and gas subsidies every year. And there's several hundreds of billions that go to agricultural subsidies, which result in negative externalities. So we need to think about how we can use those subsidies for paying for environmental goods, not environmental bads. Biodiversity offsetting is also an emerging agenda, quite contentious. The IUCN are working on a global policy on biodiversity offsetting at the moment, which it's a group I sit on, and I can assure you that it is a very, very tricky subject, but there are potential wins to be gained from biodiversity offsetting. Because with 10 billion people on the planet by 2060, development will be taking place and impacts will be happening. Investor policy shifts. This is a very, very potentially extremely powerful one. So the big pension funds, the big banks, if they look at their risk profiles and if they're investing in businesses which are depleting natural capital at a rapid rate and they make the cost of their finance more expensive to those people, and this is happening, for example, with the National Australia Bank in Australia, who are looking at the risk profile of the farmers that they lend to and increasing the cost of finance to those farmers. This could be a real game changer. This could actually be quite revolutionary because the finance sector clearly drives a lot of what happens with business. And this is related to the credit risk ratings and natural capital risk exposure. So we're getting a lot more smart about understanding what our long-term risk is from depleting natural capital. And businesses are beginning to look at corporate natural capital accounting. And there is an initiative underway at a global level called the Natural Capital Protocol, which is an accounting standard for looking for a business to allow them to look through their supply chain and understand what their impacts and dependencies are on natural capital and compare that to another business, because it is a standard accounting methodology. ICN are also involved in that at a global level. So just to finish with some government policy ideas from some of the work actually we've been doing in the UK. We've been working with the Scottish government, which is almost independent from the United Kingdom, but not quite, and they do have a different economic strategy based on this idea that there are three foundations of prosperity, and economic capital is only one of them. Clearly, social capital is an incredibly big one too, but this idea that natural capital, economic, social, and social capital are the foundations of prosperity. This is really relates to the three legs of the stool of sustainable development, but it's a different way of framing it, and you can have different prosperity pathways to the ultimate outcome, which is actually a flourishing Scotland and a flourishing society. So we've been working. My first recommendation would be to get the concept of natural capital firmly embedded at a high level in government and state level economic strategies, not environmental strategies, economic strategies, and then look at what are the best options in terms of public policy priorities for achieving the biggest impact and go for those first. So this is some work that the World Business Council for Sustainable Development have undertaken, and they're looking at the efficiency and the effectiveness of different interventions from government and the feasibility of doing those. And clearly the big red bubble on the right-hand side there, subsidy reform, is an extremely powerful driver of, as I said before in a previous slide, paying for environmental goods rather than environmental bads. But there's various others, payments for ecosystem services, offsetting in the no net loss concept is there, but also investments in natural capital. Now, I don't expect you to read all the words on this slide, but this is just to give you an indication of some work which we're carrying out in Scotland at the moment, which I think is quite groundbreaking and pioneering. The idea is to develop a set of ecosystem health indicators which look at things like habitat quality and condition, the extent of semi-natural habitat, indexes of species diversity, the degree of fragmentation in landscapes, the degree to which the landscape is shedding or sequestering carbon, and also resilience indicators such as the penetration of invasive non-native species and the soil erosion indexes. So taken together, this will give you a very, very good idea of what is happening in a given area. And scale is extremely important here. Clearly you could do this for Brazil, but I don't think that would give you the tools to make the right decisions then to make the interventions to improve the natural environment. You need to do this at the right scale. Australia has done some pioneering work here. I know this is a very difficult map to see on the screen, but the idea here is these are sub-catchments. They're areas of land which are based on river catchments, and each one of them has a grade. So you might get some catchments there which will be a B plus, and there'll be others which will be a D minus. And that's because that's measured by the ecosystem health indicators for those areas. So a recommendation, if you like, from some of the work we've been doing in Scotland would be to have a look at whether this is applicable to Brazil, and think about the units where you could apply ecosystem health indicators, and then set targets for the improvement of those indicators. Now, if you combine that with natural capital valuations and you understand the monetary losses that you're making through not protecting natural capital in those areas, then that becomes a very, very powerful tool. So I will finish there. Don't expect you to read that either. I'll leave that with you. That's really for anybody that wants to see the presentation afterwards. But those are my top three recommendations. Value and map natural capital at local, catchment and national levels. Use sound science to develop ecosystem health indicators. Create forums where both the public, the private, the communities around the country and the NGOs can come together to talk about economics as well as ecology. And encourage the public financed institutions to work with the ratings agencies to create financial products which internalize natural capital externalities. Slightly jargony language, but this is language we really do need to embrace if we're going to create change. And then finally, relentlessly focus the investment on the key threats to Brazilian biodiversity to avoid that natural capital stock depletion, and regulate better and implement better to protect natural capital from private short-term plunder, because that is the problem. The natural capital is a public asset which too often is plundered by very, very vested private interests very quickly in very short timescales to the detriment of society and the economy. And I will leave it there, and hopefully we'll get time for some questions later. Thank you very much. The second World Forum on Natural Capital is in Edinburgh this year in November 2015, so I hope to see some of you there. If not all of you there, it'd be fantastic. And thank you very much on behalf of the Scottish Wildlife Trust and the International Union for the Conservation of Nature for the very kind invitation to speak today. Thank you.
Okay. Vamos passar agora a palavra ao Dr. Mohamed Shahbaz, pesquisador-chefe da Rede Inter-Islâmica de Desenvolvimento e Manejo da Água da Jordânia. Uma palavra pelo tempo de 10 minutos.
Thank you, President Alencar, for this massive opportunity to share with you and your colleagues this important topic that you are discussing at your forum here today. I am Mohamed Shahbaz. I come from Jordan. Jordan is a very small country, about 5% of Brazil. But we have been there as a crossroad for civilizations for the past 7 to 10,000 years. So we have established a great deal of knowledge and tradition. I would like also to thank Minister Antonio for giving me my first visit to your beautiful country. Unfortunately, I have been traveling for the last 20 2.5 days, which gave me only 5 to 6 hours to sleep. So it's very difficult to be focused on what we are talking here today. I will be very brief with you and share all the information that I could. Thank you again, Antonio, for this great opportunity to be here in your beautiful country. Well, I must say that it's pretty unfortunate that your country's biological heritage is not only a national treasure for you, it is a big concern for the rest of the people around the world, because it is so important for each individual that is living on this earth. And that's why we are all here. It's the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, that is interested so much in your country. And that's why we have been agglomerating around with Antonio and rallying, trying to support and extend a helping hand for you. I'm not here trying to give you a magical solution or trying to wind some magic here. We are here to cooperate. We are here to learn from each other and to be able to provide some kind of assistance and support for each other. And that's how we will open dialogue and channels to make this possible. In fact, I am very interested in what you have created here, particularly in the deliberations this morning, that you have the legislator, and you have the judicial, and you have the executive, the government, sitting together and seeing each other horizontally, not vertically. They're seeing each other, and they are talking to each other and creating a dialogue. This is very important for the following reasons. It's important to synchronize with each other. These great institutions of your country, they must be synchronized with each other on a very important topic, which is your most important treasure of your country that has evolved for millions and millions of years, and it's there to be used with rationale. And it's very important also to buffer the differences. The intergovernmental competition always makes differences. And it's very important to buffer these differences if you can sit down and talk to each other and see each other vertically. This is great transparency. The other issue is you can build on this for the future and move forward quickly. So biodiversity is a huge domain. And if I wanted to talk about it, neither I nor anybody else can talk about it in a session or two. It will take ages and days. But what I'm trying to do is to present to you my humble experience in a very small, small component. That is, what are we doing with local people, with traditional knowledge, etc., with relevance to all the knowledge we have developed scientifically in the 21st century and globally, and how this can be integrated, how important it is. So I am suggesting that traditional knowledge and traditional laws are very important, and it is a gap that needs to be related to international conventions. It's a very easy, cost-effective way to manage things simply. We need simple solutions. We don't need complex solutions for biodiversity resources management. So international policies and cooperation frameworks set targets for states around the world to achieve, considering a solution fit for all. It is a difficult situation. You cannot find one solution fit for all. It's a difficult criteria. There is state sensitivity to such approach, and it has been a dilemma to be resolved, particularly in biodiversity domain, where every global geographic location has its unique local resources. So one fit-for-all solution does not manage for local unique solution resources. Stemming from this argument, many gaps exist in those cooperation treaties or conventions, and no single institution or country can do it alone. It has to be a coherent, cooperative approach. The diversity of natural systems presents the sustainability of these resources. Capitalizing on the various eutrophication levels that exist within them as their food chain. And that's why the diversity is so important. If it was not for the consistency, for the consistent diversity, species will not survive because they are food for each other. And it is a chain that's going up and down. The question is how we do conserve. It's not why, where, etc. How we do it. The most important aspect, in my point of view, is governance issues. You can have all the information you want. You can have all the procedures you want and conventions you want. It's how you govern these systems, how you make your decisions at the end of the day. At the same time, the overwhelming majority benefiting from these diverse natural resources are people and communities making use of those various goods and services provided by those natural systems and ecosystems. Historically, those communities have created the most practical norms to be followed by individuals or groups accessing and utilizing nature's resources. Norms that have existed for thousands of years and never failed. Such are social frameworks and tribal laws. This kind of governance came from need to exist by people and communities when they noticed that every natural habitat has its carrying capacity. If exceeded, the ecosystem will break down and the beneficiaries lose their opportunities. Legislators have overlooked customary laws for some time. It is not the legislator's responsibility to dig out those customary laws. It is the responsibility of the technical agency which is in charge of the resource management. The legislator should, in fact, be happy for such initiatives that need minimum effort and work. The state should accommodate the communities and stakeholders cooperating to make it work. And on the receiving end, the stakeholders should be happy to maintain their interest and interests alive. This is what you call a win-win situation. No party loses stakes. Shall I continue or stop? Shall I continue? Okay. This is what you call a win-win situation. No party loses a stake that has its importance in the livelihood of people or governance or resource governance. I just want to introduce one ancient resource governance system that has been actually developed in my part of the world. To give a real-life example on the above, HEMA governance system, HEMA means in Arabic protection and conservation. It was created in the Arabian Natural Resource Conservation Community for Framework, invented by people and executed by people too. HEMA is built on three pillars: tribal law, tribal judicial, and monitoring and execution. Considering an example of rangelands for animal grazing, the tribal law says, do not graze natural plants before full growth and reseed to sustain the natural reproduction cycle. To monitor the situation, there are tribal rangers called Ruwad. They themselves, the tribes, they select them and monitor how their natural resources are actually managed. They keep a sharp eye on the pastures and make sure the law is not violated. If the law is violated, they report back to the sheikh of the tribe. And then the sheikh convenes the tribal court. And the tribal judge makes sure the violation is dealt with adequately. There are so many examples around the world that can serve as a role model here. In partnership with local communities for the conservation of nature. Ladies and gentlemen, let me summarize what I have just presented. The ability of nature conservation in partnership with stakeholders and communities is valid. Conservation governance is in partnership with local community users is a win-win situation. Let's move from monologue to dialogue. This is the important concept here. The issue of considering such partnership should not elude international and global initiatives and conventions such as CBD or etc. Thank you, Chair.